Hi, and welcome to the 25th episode of the Language Meanderings podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today I'm going to be talking a little bit about business in France and Mexico. Let's take a listen to these two conversations that I typically have had either in France and in Mexico.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, j'ai un rendez-vous avec Monsieur Renard à 10h pour un cours d'anglais.
D'accord. Je peux avoir votre pièce d'identité, s'il vous plaît?
Tenez.
Merci. Voici votre badge. Asseyez-vous là-bas. Monsieur Renard arrive dans un instant.
Merci.
Je vous en prie. Buenos días.
¿Qué tal? Buenos días, señorita. Tengo una junta con Marco Velázquez a las 10.
¿Su nombre?
Jonathan Huggins.
¿Su IFE o pasaporte, por favor?
Aquí tiene.
Aquí tiene su gafete. Los elevadores están allá. Su oficina está en el piso 11.
Muchas gracias. Buen día.
Igualmente.
Okay, so as you can hear, I mean, both the situations are a bit formal if I'm dealing with a receptionist. But overall, when I have had students in France, the situation has been very formal. Most of the time, I have to know their last name. So there's the like Monsieur Renard or Madame Boulanger, things like that. And anytime that I was writing emails to my students, everything was just in the very formal French using the vous form. I never ever used like the tu, the informal with my students. It was always using a vous. And even if I had taken classes with these people for about 6 months or even more than 6 months, we were always on formal terms. In terms of the planning, the school that I worked with had a very strict policy of about 48 hours to cancel. Yeah, most of the time in France, at least, and in other parts of Europe, the scheduling was at least several months in advance. I remember seeing emails, if I were in the middle of March, some students with their secretaries or their assistants were planning the schedule for classes in the month of May and were saying, oh, well, this student has a business trip on these couple of days in May, and well, can we reschedule? Okay, yes, we'll put the classes for June. And I would look at these emails from the planning, and we would be in the month of March, and they would already have my schedule perhaps booked for the month of April and part of the month of May. So in terms of scheduling, the European students, at least the ones in France, were very organized, and there really weren't too many surprises in terms of last-minute business trips or last-minute meetings. Things were rather well planned out in advance. So I think this kind of goes in hand with having a very formal communication, formal relations between the teachers and the school and the students, and just maybe having some respect for each other's schedules. In contrast, when I first came to Mexico after living in France for about 6 years, I had a lot of culture shock because I tried to implement like a 48-hour cancellation policy with my students, and they were very alarmed or up in arms because they said, no, that's impossible. I have no idea what my schedule is tomorrow. So I was able to try to work it down to or up to a 24-hour schedule. And then even for some busy students, the maximum I could get was maybe a 6-hour cancellation policy, because at the start of the day, the people would not necessarily know how their schedule was going to be at the end of the day, because they would be constantly dealing with urgent matters that were last minute. There were projects and documents that would be due the day before. So in Mexico, typically people have to deal with urgent matters, and there's a lot of things that are just unpredictable in the scheduling, and there's a lot of last minute meetings and changes to schedules. So for a lot of students, it's just kind of impossible to respect a regular class schedule. And I think this also goes hand in hand with the cultural differences, because for almost all of my students in Mexico, I know their first name, and in some cases, I don't know their last name. And most of the time with those students, I do not use the usted formal conjugations. Most of the time we are on like a very friendly, informal communication using the tú. And most of my emails reflect that in terms of saying like an hola, like ¿cómo estás, Jonathan? So it's a very informal society in general. And even for business communication, many students have told me when I have written something like very formal, if, for example, the students need to cancel and I'm trying to remind them of a cancellation policy or trying to give them some formal information, they look at my emails and they've told me on several occasions, like, these messages are just way too formal for Mexico. If I was trying to say something similar to what I would have said in France. So sometimes the students here in Mexico have interpreted this as me being standoffish or very formal or just not approachable or just in some cases being not friendly if the communication just seems very formal. Where in contrast in France, if I had used communication using the tú and using some of the people's using their first names, it would have just been a bit of a shock for those people. So there's really a big difference for the communication style and the formality. Another thing that I've noticed is in terms of being a freelance teacher in Mexico, it's very difficult to just expect that my CV or my credentials will kind of speak for themselves. It's very important to have a referral or to have some kind of a recommendation from somebody who knows somebody. In general, most students want to have heard about you from somebody else, and they usually don't want to take a risk of having a class with somebody they don't know. So it's a little difficult sometimes to get into the market if you don't have those referrals and if you just kind of present yourself with a business card or kind of a cold call or kind of door-to-door salesmanship. It's very difficult in Mexico to have success with that. So it's very important to develop kind of a rapport with somebody who can introduce you to potential students. So that kind of word of mouth marketing is very important in Mexico, especially for teachers who are just getting set up in, at least for Mexico City, for example. For France, I think with society being a little more formal, I think the credentials and business card, and if there's a referral, that's even better. But many times there is kind of some trust in a CV or a resume, and if there is a recommendation from one student to another, then that works well. I also noticed that when I was living in Paris, I got several students by posting flyers or different kind of messages where they could tear off my phone number. If I posted this at different places like a pharmacy or a supermarket or a hardware store, people were willing to try out that information from somebody that they did not know. So I would receive a phone call and say, okay, I saw your flyer. I took down your number. Could we meet? Could we have a trial class? And so people were willing to do that. In Mexico, I hardly ever see these kinds of flyers at supermarkets or different places where there might be a bulletin board. And I think because Mexican society is a bit more mistrustful of people you don't know, and also you don't know if you're going to leave your personal information like a telephone number or a cell phone number, you don't know if somebody is going to take advantage of that information. So you have to be careful with personal information, your business address or your home address. That's information you really don't want to give out freely. The reality is that sometimes there are kidnappings or different problems that could result if people knew where you live or what your number is, or they could try to extort you, things like that, where in France, those are things that I have not heard of, fortunately. Those kinds of problems where living in Mexico has just taken on a different aspect that is sometimes not purely the business side of business, but it's also just living here. You have to be careful of, like, for example, as a teacher, if I use my laptop and I'm traveling in public transportation, I usually try not to have a bag that looks very obvious that I'm carrying a computer, or especially like a laptop or a netbook. I try to be as discreet as possible. Also, in terms of wearing flashy jewelry or a watch, I've stopped wearing watches and anything that might draw attention to me, because I don't want it to be potentially stolen. Several years ago, when I think the iPhone came out, or maybe the Samsung smartphones, people were reluctant to buy them because they were afraid that they would be instantly stolen. And I have heard of one case where somebody was showing off their new purchase in the metro, and somebody maybe stuck a finger in their coat pocket up against this person and said, "Give me your phone." So those are some things to be, to take into account for just kind of the living in Mexico and doing business in Mexico. You just kind of don't want to draw attention to yourself. Also, if you're going to take a taxi in Mexico City, you don't want to take one just on the street. It's very important to take one at what's called a taxi de sitio, or a taxi radio. Or now in the market, there are Uber cars, which are starting to little by little replace the business from most taxis. And the problem with taking a taxi on the street is that there's a potential risk of, well, you could be kidnapped, you could be mugged, there could be some kind of a situation in place where they're going to extort you or take your money or harass you in some way, that they might force you to go to an ATM and withdraw money repeatedly. So you have to be careful, and knock on wood, fortunately, I have not had those problems myself, but I definitely do know of people directly who have been affected and who have had problems before with taxis. And so that's another aspect of doing business in Mexico. You have to be careful of just the insecurity and just the way society works here. So in Paris, the level of public transportation was very good, and I almost never had to take a taxi unless it was for some reason, like the language school that I was working with said, some teacher just canceled, can you go out to the airport right now to work with the Air France, for example? So that would just be one situation where, like, I had to take a taxi to get somewhere immediately, or if there were problems with, like, a metro strike, something like that, which affected my ability to get from an office. Other than that, I was using the public transportation in Paris, taking buses, taking the RER to different suburbs outside of Paris. Things worked pretty well to get from one office to another. The metro was rather reliable, and the trains were rather reliable, so it was fairly predictable to know how long it would take the commute to get from one office to another, or to get from home to one office. For example, the business district for the La Défense, I knew basically I could be anywhere in Paris within like maybe 45 minutes. Mexico City, on the other hand, traffic is completely unpredictable, whether it's in the morning and you're driving and then suddenly something happens and the traffic is just horrible, or trying to get home in the evenings from like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, you could suddenly be stuck in 2 hours of traffic. And on another day, for example, Sunday morning, that same distance could take 5 to 10 minutes. So in some cases, it can be really ridiculous to not know how long it's going to take to get somewhere. And in some cases, just leaving 5 minutes earlier or later can make a huge difference on certain major axes around the city, like Periférico or Reforma or Insurgentes or Tlalpan or Viaducto. I mean, if you leave a few minutes later than normal, than you normally do, you might get stuck in some really bad traffic. And so a lot of times, because of that, people are very, well, somewhat tolerant on the flexibility of being punctual. So they do say that the kind of Spanish-speaking culture, and perhaps Mexico is an example of that, where time is a flexible concept. So this is something that kind of doesn't just affect business life, but it affects like all areas of life. So that if there's a family meeting, family meal, sometimes people might arrive an hour later or an hour and a half later and say, oh, well, the traffic was really, really bad. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to get here. For business meetings, I wouldn't expect to say somebody's going to arrive an hour and a half late because, well, if there's an hour for the meeting, an hour for the class, that would be a complete hour wasted. But I have been in certain situations where I have a class at 8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning, and the people might be showing up like a half hour late, and well, they say they're very embarrassed and they had problems with the traffic. But so most of the times, I think saying there's problems with the traffic and it was unpredictable, some cases it's an excuse, but in other cases it is true that it's kind of just unpredictable sometimes to know, is it going to take you a half hour to get there, or is it going to take you an hour to get there? And sometimes it's like, you know, your commute perfectly, but it's just, it can be very unpredictable sometimes. Also, what I just mentioned of having like a class at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. or something like that. When I was in Paris, I think my earliest class was 9 a.m. I think most businesses, they started and they would work from like 9 and perhaps finish at 5. But culturally speaking, I'd say in France, you would not want to leave the office before the boss did. So that a lot of employees would stay working later, a little bit later, because they would want to show their boss that they were kind of dedicated employees. And so they would have like long hours, in some cases where they would be paid like a monthly salary, but it would not necessarily be reflected in terms of how many hours they would be working. Technically speaking, the French do work a 35-hour work week, but for some people who are like what cadre, which would be like kind of a managerial status, and beyond that, they kind of are expected to just kind of get their work done and like put in extra hours, but not necessarily expect that to be transferred into like overtime pay. So for certain employees, they would kind of stay a little bit later at the office. And one thing I remember kind of using to gauge the kind of the work schedule is that the nightly news in France is at 7 o'clock p.m. and at 8 o'clock p.m. And as an American, I remember, well, if when I was working in the States, like when people say they finish at 5 o'clock, they finish at 5 o'clock, and they would be at home. I mean, depending on the traffic and things like that, in Southern California, I mean, the traffic is also a little unpredictable, but they could be at home by 5:30, and they could be having dinner with their family at 6 o'clock and watching the nightly news with Tom Brokaw at 6:30 in the national news. So yeah, by like 6 o'clock, people are already having dinner and with their families, and they have the rest of their evening to do whatever they want. But other cultures like France, these people might be getting home around 7 or 8 and having their dinner then and going to bed maybe a little bit later. And so, yeah, my earliest classes were at 9 a.m. And as an exception, like really an exception, the planning may have contacted me to say, okay, this one student wants a class at 8:30. Are you willing to do that at 8:30 in the morning? And I would say, okay, yeah, no problem. That might probably be a telephone class. In Mexico, I think my earliest class has been 7 a.m. So many, many students would try to take classes before they get started. So they might get started early. And in the past 2 years, working as an office employee, my hours were 8:30 to 5:30. So, I mean, I can understand how some of these students would want to have classes from like 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. or 7:30 to 8:30 before they actually start their office hours. So students would want their classes from like either 7 to 8 or 7:30 to 8:30. And then after that, there would be like no classes from like 9 a.m. Or 10 a.m. until lunchtime. People would try to get some classes in maybe at 2 p.m., 3 p.m. during the lunch break, probably later in the evening when they finish. So they might try to take some classes at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock when they're finished. That's another thing in terms of when to eat as part of the business day. In mid-Mexico, typically lunch might be around like 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. When I was at the office these past 2 years, I was usually getting lunch closer to 4 o'clock just because nobody would be in the company restaurant, and I could just easily get a table and I wouldn't have to stand in line to wait for the food. In Paris, it's very typical that lunch might be from 11 a.m. to maybe at the latest 2 o'clock. So if you had a Mexican lunch at like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, chances are you're not going to find a restaurant that's open. Typically in Mexico, it's very easy to find a lot of street food. So you might find taco stands and sandwich stands and all kinds of food options on the street, and so you don't always have to go to a restaurant. But in Paris, you don't really have many of those options to eat something on the street. Most of the time you do actually have to eat at a restaurant, and if you don't happen to go to a restaurant when the restaurant is open, you might end up starving. So I already mentioned that a little bit in one of the other podcasts about food and drinks in Mexico and France, so I won't go into those details too much. But in terms of the business day, if you do have a lunch break, respect it, because chances are if you kind of are working during that time and you skip the opportunity to have food, you may not have that chance again, and then you may have to wait until dinner time, especially for France. But in Mexico, you would be able to kind of find an option. If like you don't have to look very hard to find tacos or quesadillas or whatever on the street. There's a lot of food options. So yeah, that's just, I guess, a little bit of the aspects of doing business in France and Mexico in terms of the business formality, whether to address people as tu or usted or tu or vous, the communication style, being punctual, and with the commute and the public transportation or taxis, the opportunities for, well, if you're going to eat. And I guess also in terms of the clothing, for me, coming from California, we basically wear like khakis and a polo shirt, and that's very formal attire, especially if you look at people in Silicon Valley where they've had kind of like that's even too much for sometimes where they're kind of used to a like especially the tech companies might be used to a very informal way of dressing. In France, however, I related France and Europe kind of like the East Coast of the United States, where a lot of it was very formal attire, so like a suit and a tie. For me, doing business as a teacher, so in Paris, I didn't necessarily have to wear a tie, but I was wearing dress shirts and business pants or dress pants so that I could go to my students' offices. I did see some students, some teachers who were wearing jeans with a dress shirt, but I think they were a little older than me, and I think they were a bit more comfortable with knowing business situations in France. In Mexico, when I first got started, I was wearing probably like khakis and a dress shirt, and I didn't really wear a suit and tie. When I was working with one of the big four audit companies, I was wearing a suit and tie every day, and then Fridays was kind of a casual Friday so that I could wear just a dress shirt without a tie and probably wear khakis, something like that. So that's just to kind of be aware of. And also in some cases, a lot of my students were lawyers and accountants in a couple of different offices. And when I was working with students at some media companies, I saw almost nobody wearing a suit and a tie. So it was usually very relaxed attire every day. So so sometimes when I was going to different offices where I might be working with lawyers and then later in the day working with people at the media agencies, I kind of had a balance of how I was going to look because maybe I was going to look too formal in one case and maybe look really underdressed in another office. So, the students understood that. I mean, like, I was not necessarily confined to their dress code, but you also don't want to look like you're just wearing jeans and a t-shirt to go teach a business English class. So you have to be kind of sensitive to that, to how do your students dress? How do the people at the offices dress? Just to kind of blend in. Otherwise, if you're just teaching kind of casual conversation classes and you're meeting students at a cafe or a restaurant, it really probably doesn't matter too much of how you are dressing. But it's nice to look kind of presentable. So keep that in mind. Also, I think in Mexico, for example, if you are wearing kind of business attire, it's really important to have like nice polished shoes and also to have your dress shirts properly ironed. So that's another thing that's part of Mexican society, is that a lot of people have access to either a maid who can iron their dress shirts or taking their clothes to the dry cleaners is relatively inexpensive. So there's no excuse to not look nice. So Mexicans usually do take that aspect of looking properly dressed, having your shoes look nice and polished. So they do take that as an important aspect of how you look. In France, I hate to generalize this, but there are business people who may not have had a shower every day. And I know at other jobs that, I mean, there might be people who wear the same clothes two days in a row. So I don't want to generalize that too much, but I know that case exists. So, but that's enough said, I would say. And I do remember on a few occasions, there was one set of advertising in one of the buses that said, like, please have a valid transportation ticket and a strong deodorant. So you can interpret that as you wish. So when I was going to different people's offices, I did make sure like I was presentable. But in winter, I do admit that there were times where my dress shirt was not properly ironed. Maybe I just ironed the collar and wore a really heavy winter sweater and a winter coat, and nobody noticed. If I did not take off my sweater, nobody noticed that my shirt was not properly ironed. So, and I would say that dry cleaning was probably a little expensive, and it's very typical that people in France do not have a maid to iron their clothes. So you have to iron your clothes on your own. So if it's winter and it's cold, you may get away with being a little lazy and not as presentable as maybe you should. So I do admit that. Kind of, if you're going to do that, then wear a dress shirt that isn't necessarily properly ironed. Kind of, you're doing that at your risk. But in Mexico, that would really not go down well. If people saw you wearing a dress shirt and it was not ironed, they would probably it would probably reflect poorly on you. So just kind of keep that aspect in mind for the dress code. So I think that's about it in terms of the cultural differences, the dress code, the transportation, the commute, the opportunity to kind of eat for lunch, and the kind of communication rapport that I had with students in those two different countries. So I hope you have found this cultural analysis kind of interesting and helpful if you do have to deal with students or business opportunities in France and Mexico. Well, thank you very much for listening to this podcast. And if you would like to take English lessons with me to hear more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at hugginsinternational.com. That's H-U-G-G-I-N-S international.com. Or you can send me an email at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. Thank you very much, and I look forward to the next podcast. Take care.